Your Excellency Donald Trump, President of the United States of America. Your Excellency Trần Đại Quang, President of the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the media, President Trần Đại Quang and President Donald Trump are now hosting a press briefing to announce the results of their talks. And may I now invite His Excellency President Trần Đại Quang to deliver his remarks. Your Excellency Donald Trump, President of the United States of America. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the media. President Trump and I have had fruitful talks about the bilateral relations and regional and international issues of mutual interest. We both share the views that the bilateral relations have scored substantial results over the years, delivering enormous benefits to the people of both countries. During President Trump's state visit to Vietnam, Vietnam and the United States issued a joint statement pledging to further deepen the Vietnam-United States comprehensive partnership on the basis of mutual respect for each other's independence, sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political systems. Within the visit's framework, the two sides reached important agreements on economy and trade. Addressing war legacy issues will receive higher priority, and we are committed to collaborate actively on this matter. Vietnam highly values the United States' decision to cooperate with Vietnam on dioxin cleanup at Bien Hoa Air Base after the two countries successfully concluded the dioxin cleanup project at Da Nang Airport. The President and I discussed regional and international issues of mutual interest. We agreed to strengthen our close coordination at regional and international forums to contribute to the maintenance of peace and stability in the region and the world at large. We also agreed on the importance of the ASEAN-United States strategic partnership. We believe that the development of Vietnam-US relations would not only benefit each country, but also contribute to strengthening ASEAN-US relations for peace, stability, cooperation, and development in the Asia-Pacific and the world. The President's state visit to Vietnam marks a milestone in Vietnam-US relations, creating strong momentum for the substantive and effective and stable development of the bilateral comprehensive partnership. I wish President Trump and members of the US delegation a successful visit, and I hope that you will have good impressions of our country and our people. I sincerely thank Mr. President personally and the American people for the warm friendship towards our country and people, and I appreciate the great efforts to develop Vietnam-US bilateral relations. I would also like to thank all American and Vietnamese reporters who are here today. Thank you very much. Thank you, President Trần Đại Quang. May I now invite His Excellency Mr. Donald Trump, President of the United States, to deliver his remarks.
Thank you very much, President Quang, and thank you for your tremendous hospitality during my first visit to Vietnam. It is a pleasure to be with you right here in Hanoi. On behalf of the entire American delegation, I want to thank the Vietnamese people for their warm welcome and to reaffirm the strong friendship and growing partnership between our two nations. Travelers from all around the world, including many Americans, come to Vietnam each year to admire your magnificent limestone mountains, cycle through your many winding hillsides, or swim in the majestic Ha Long Bay. Your nation's magnificence brings different people together from around the world in shared appreciation of the great beauty and splendor of your wonderful country. Over the past two decades, our two nations have come together to find common purpose based on common interests, and that's what's happening. It is those crucial bonds we are here to reaffirm today. In May, the United States transferred the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Morgenthau to the people and country of Vietnam. Named for U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Morgenthau, Jr., this vessel once patrolled the coasts of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Today, the same American vessel, a gift between partners, is sailing the waters of the Pacific on its way to patrol these coasts for the people of Vietnam. This month, we mark Veterans Day in the United States, and out of war and conflict, we have achieved a deep friendship, partnership, and we have achieved peace. Bound by mutual respect and common experience, our veterans laid the foundation for that achievement between our nations. Our decades-long joint humanitarian efforts with the Vietnamese people and government to account for and recover personnel still missing, so important to us, from the war honors, these horrors of this horrendous war, we want our service members support, and we give total support to the families, and we strengthen the foundation of our comprehensive partnership that is so important to us. In the spirit of our friendship, I want to congratulate President Kwan for hosting a very successful APEC leaders meeting this week in Da Nang. Congratulations, you did a fantastic job. Thank you. As I stated in my address to the APEC CEO Summit on Friday, the United States is committed to a free and open Indo-Pacific where strong, independent nations respect each other's sovereignty, uphold the rule of law, and advance responsible commerce. We want our partners in the Indo-Pacific to be proud and self-reliant, not proxies or satellites. We look forward to achieving a bilateral trade agreement with partners who abide by the principles of fair and reciprocal trade. Two very important words, fair and reciprocal. It hasn't been that way for the United States almost at all. And we're changing that, and we're changing it rapidly. For trade to work, all countries must play by the rules. I am encouraged that Vietnam has recently become the fastest growing export market to the United States. Mr. President, I applaud your efforts to implement economic reforms and increase Vietnam's trade and investment in all directions. The United States is enthusiastic about reforms that promote economic prosperity for all Vietnamese citizens as we look to your growing middle class as a key market for American goods and services. We just had a great discussion about American goods and services coming in to Vietnam. Two-way street. I am confident that American energy, agriculture, financial services, aviation, digital commerce, and defense products are able to meet all of your many commercial needs, and in fact, not only meet them, but what we do is better than anybody else. Moving forward, I welcome Vietnam's commitment to eliminating trade barriers for U.S. agricultural products. It's very important. We must ensure that American farmers and all American companies, especially those in digital services and e-commerce, can compete on a level playing field. And we look forward to working with you to combat predatory and unfair trade practices in the region. On security issues, we continue to work with our Vietnamese partners and with partners across the region on a range of challenges, including maritime security, counterterrorism, human and drug trafficking, cybercrime, and disease prevention. Later today, I will travel to the Philippines, where I will discuss many of these issues at the U.S. ASEAN Summit and the East Asia Summit. The ASEAN Summit is going to be something I think very, very special. I look forward to attending. We will also discuss the growing threat from North Korea. As I said in my speech to the Republic of Korea's National Assembly, all responsible nations must act now to ensure that North Korea's rogue regime stops threatening the world with unthinkable loss of life. Safety and security are goals that should unite all civilized nations. We want progress, not provocation. I mean, we have been provoked. The world has been provoked. We don't want that. We want stability, not chaos. And we want peace, not war. Mr. President, thank you for being such a gracious host during my time right here in Vietnam. I toured areas of Vietnam, and it is magnificent what's happening. Over the past two decades, our nations have continued to grow closer in advancing our shared interests. The history of our two nations reveals the possibilities for peace and progress in our world. Moving forward as partners, we will achieve great prosperity and success for the American people and for the Vietnamese people. I thank you very much. Thank you.
Xin trân trọng cảm ơn.
Thank you very much, President Donald Trump. And now the floor is open to your questions. President Trần Đại Quang, I'm from Vietnam News Agency. Can you elaborate on the progresses in the Vietnam-U.S. relations over the past years? Well, dear reporters, over the past years, the Vietnam-U.S. relations have made very strong progress in all areas, from politics, diplomacy, economy, trade, science and technology, health, humanitarian areas, and people-to-people exchange. And in particular, high-level contacts, meetings, and exchange of delegations on the basis of the comprehensive partnership have produced substantive and meaningful results. And among them, the visit to the United States by Prime Minister Nguyễn Xuân Phúc in May this year, and the state visit to Vietnam of Honorable President Donald Trump in the very first year of his term of office are the highlights. Meetings between leaders of Vietnam and the president during his visit are very useful, and the meetings give us the opportunity to understand each other better and to work together on areas of mutual interest. The substantive and effective growth of the comprehensive partnership between the two countries have been and will be delivering benefits to our two peoples and contributing to the maintenance of peace, stability, cooperation, and prosperity in the region and the world. Thank you. I'm from VTV and have another question for President Trần Đại Quang. Can you please provide your assessment of the future outlook of the Vietnam-U.S. relationship? Thank you for your question. Well, during the talks that I had with the president, we acknowledge that there is still much room for further expansion of the bilateral relations, and we discussed ways and means to further strengthen the cooperation in a more substantive and effective manner in the time to come. And the two sides also pledged to increase contacts and dialogues, especially the high-level meetings through bilateral visits and meetings at the sidelines of the regional and international forums. Two sides will also promote the momentum for development of the economic trade investment relations on the basis of mutual interest, minimize the trade investment disputes, and will continue to effectively implement the economic and trade agreements that we have signed. We'll also strengthen cooperation in science and technology, environment, climate change, humanitarian issues, human resources development, and expanding people-to-people exchange. For the enhanced comprehensive partnership in the interest of the two peoples and for the benefit of peace, stability, cooperation, and development in the region and the world. Thank you. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. And if I could throw a little bit of a change up here, I'll ask both leaders a question as opposed to just one.
Okay.
Mr. President, to you, if we could first, on the way here to Hanoi from Da Nang, you talked about your meetings with Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday, in which
yes.
you said you received further assurances from him that he did not meddle in the U.S. election.
That's true.
There was some uncertainty that brewed back in the United States over your statement that you said when he tells me that, I believe that he means it. That was taken in some circles, including Senator John McCain, to think that you believe that he is saying he did not interfere in the election. Could you once and for all definitively, sir, yes or no, say whether or not you believe that President Putin and or Russia interfered in the election?
What I said there, I'm surprised that there's any conflict on this. What I said there is that I believe he believes that, and that's very important for somebody to believe. I believe that he feels that he and Russia did not meddle in the election. As to whether I believe it or not, I'm with our agencies, especially as currently constituted with their leadership. I believe in our intel agencies, our intelligence agencies. I've worked with them very strongly. There weren't 17, as was previously reported. Mm-hmm. There were actually four. But they were saying there were 17, there were actually four. But as currently led by fine people, I believe very much in our intelligence agencies. Now, at the same time, I want to be able, because I think it's very important, to get along with Russia, to get along with China, to get along with Vietnam, to get along with lots of countries, because we have a lot of things we have to solve. And frankly, Russia and China in particular can help us with the North Korea problem, which is one of our truly great problems. So I'm not looking to stand and start arguing with somebody when there's reporters all around and cameras recording and seeing our conversation. I think it was very obvious to everybody. I believe that President Putin really feels, and he feels strongly, that he did not meddle in our election. What he believes is what he believes. What I believe is that we have to get to work, and I think everybody understood this that heard the answer. We have to get to work to solve Syria, to solve North Korea, to solve Ukraine, to solve terrorism. And, you know, people don't realize Russia's been very, very heavily sanctioned. They were sanctioned at a very high level, and that took place very recently. It's now time to get back to healing a world that is shattered and broken. Those are very important things. And I feel that having Russia in a friendly posture, as opposed to always fighting with them, is an asset to the world and an asset to our country, not a liability. And by the way, Hillary Clinton had the reset button. She wanted to get back together with Russia. She even spelled reset wrong. That's how it started. And then it got worse. President Obama wanted to get along with Russia, but the chemistry wasn't there. Getting along with other nations is a good thing. Not a bad thing, believe me. It's a good thing, not a bad thing.
And second? President Kwan, if I could ask a question of you, there are some people who believe that Vietnam could make an effective facilitator in bringing the United States and North Korea together to at least lay the groundwork potentially for negotiations. What do you believe Vietnam could bring to the table in that regard?
On North Korea issue, Vietnam is committed to seriously observing all the relevant resolution of the UNSC, and we support the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and we'll do our utmost and do whatever we can to contribute to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Thank you.
Xin cảm ơn.
Well, thank you, President Chun Dai-quan.
Tweeted this morning about trying very hard to be friends with Kim Jong-un. Is that really a possibility? What would it take for that to happen at this point? And for President Kwan, could you comment on the president's offer to mediate the South China Sea dispute? Thank you.
Steve, I think anything's a possibility. Strange things happen in life. That might be a strange thing to happen, but it's certainly a possibility. If that did happen, it would be a good thing for, I can tell you, for North Korea. but it would also be good for lots of other places, and it would be good for the world. So certainly it is something that could happen. I don't know that it will, but it would be very, very nice if it did.
With regard to the South China Sea issue, I have shared my thoughts with President Donald Trump on the recent developments in this area, and it is our policy to settle disputes in the South China Sea through peaceful negotiations. And with respect for diplomatic and legal process, in accordance with international law, including the 1982 UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. Thank you very much. Thank you, President Chen Daiguang and President Donald Trump. We have come to the end of the press briefing today. Thank you all very much for your participation.
President Putin of the Russian Federation met with President Erdogan of Turkey, and they held a press conference in Sochi, Russia, early Tuesday. It began with a discussion of the recent progress in improving relations between the two countries.
Such a progress is largely due to lifting bilateral trade barriers and restrictions. Based on the agreements we reached during our talks in Ankara, we've resumed imports for a number of food products from Turkey.
Türkiye'den bir sera tarım mahsullerinin ithalatı tekrar başlandı.
Сегодня мы обсудили совместные меры по
ликвидации ограничений на другие. We talked today about lifting restrictions for other food items.
Çalışmalarımızı da bugün ele alabildik.
С участием министров и глав ведущих компаний.
Together with the ministers and heads of leading companies, we discussed strategic cooperation in the energy industry. We talked about the Turkish stream.
Burada her şeyden önce Türk akım projesinden bahsetmek gerekir.
Это касается сооружения атомной электростанции.
We talked about the nuclear power plant.
Nükleer santralin kurulması.
В ближайшее время Росатом должен начать практическую Росатом will
Росатом şirketimiz start the practical stage of implementing this project.
В наших планах запустить первый реактор.
We plan to launch the first reactor in 2023. Of course, we also discussed the problem of Syrian settlement. On the one hand, we've achieved serious successes in fighting terrorists. At the same time, we agreed that we need to step our efforts to ensure long-term normalization of the situation in the country.
Siyasi çözüme yönelik çalışmalarımızın daha aktif hale getirilmesi konusunda mutabık kaldık.
First of all, we need to advance the process of political settlement, assisting Syrians in the post-conflict reconstruction. I told Mr. President about about the fact that together with the U.S. President at the APEC summit in Da Nang, we adopted a joint statement stating our common approach to Syrian settlement.
Ana hatlarını belirleyeceğini Sayın Cumhurbaşkanı'na ilettim ve bu konuda kendilerine bilgi verdim.
Namely, to finish off ISIS and to ensure sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of the Syrian state. I told Mr. President about the outcome of my recent visit to Tehran, my meeting with the Iranian leadership.
Leaders,
I'd like to note that our joint working with Turkey and Iran as the guarantor states of the Astana process continues to produce results. The level of violence has certainly decreased. We are creating favorable conditions for advancing pan-Syrian dialogue under the aegis of the United Nations. In conclusion, I would like to thank Mr. President and all of our Turkish friends and partners for these productive talks. We have a very good practice of a business-like informal exchange of views, adjusting our plans and reviewing the results of our previous work. These meetings are free from bureaucracy, from all sorts of quasi-diplomatic procedures and protocol events. I believe they are very productive, and we are grateful for that to our Turkish friends, and we intend to continue with this practice. Thank you.
Sayın Devlet Başkanı, kıymetli heyet üyeleri, değerli basın mensupları, sizleri sevgiyle, saygıyla selamlıyorum.
Уважаемый господин президент, дорогие члены,
dear Mr. President, дорогие гости, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to see all of you.
Öncelikle kıymetli dostum Sayın Putin'in şahsında tüm Rus makamlarına misafirperverlikleri için teşekkür ediyorum.
Хочу выразить благодарность.
I would like to thank Russia for the warm welcome. I would like to thank the Russian President and the Russian General. During this year, this is the third time I visit Russia this year.
Ziyaretim vesilesiyle değerli dostum Sayın Putin'le yıl içerisindeki 6. görüşmemizi gerçekleştirdik.
А сегодняшняя наша встреча в течение этого года уже является шестой с господином Путиным.
And this is the sixth time I meet with Mr. Putin this year.
Sayın Putin'le mutabık kaldık.
Мы пришли к согласию с господином Путиным относительно углубления наших отношений, двусторонних отношений.
We have agreed that we need to further develop our bilateral relations.
Наши встречи интенсивно продолжаются как в формате тет-а-тет.
We continue intense contacts, meeting face to face and having telephone conversations.
7. Toplantısının hazırlıklarına da şimdiden başladık.
Исходя из этого, мы можем сказать, что уже начали.
Based on that, we can say that we have started preparations for the 7th meeting of the Higher Cooperation Council.
Siyasi diyalogumuza paralel olarak ekonomik ilişkilerimiz de yükseliş seyrine girmiş bulunuyor.
Наряду с политическим диалогом,
in addition to political dialogue,
наши отношения вышли уже на высокий уровень.
We are improving our economic relations as well.
Bazı tarım ürünlerinin Rusya'ya girişine izin verilmesi, vatandaşlarımızın çalışma izni sorunlarının hallolması gibi konularda değerli dostum Putin'in verdiği müjdeler bizleri memnun etmişti.
During my visit to the Russian capital in March, my dear friend Vladimir Putin shared some happy news with us, saying that the restrictions for certain food products had been lifted, and the issue of visa-free travel for Turkish citizens is also being worked out. During this period, we continued our intense contacts to remove all the existing problems. Last month, the bilateral commission completed its work in Kazan.
Rus pazarına girişinin kolaylaştırılmasına yönelik alınan kararları memnuniyetle karşıladık.
We were happy to find out that this meeting made decisions to lift restrictions for eggplants, tomatoes, pomegranates, and other agricultural products. But we would like all the remaining restrictions to be lifted as well.
Ciddi bir artışla 15 milyar dolara aştı.
In the first quarter of this year, the level of our economic relations grew by 26.5%, exceeding $15 billion. Compared to last year, that's a 26% increase.
Dolar olarak açıkladığımız hedefimize ulaşmak için iş adamlarımızın önündeki vizede dahil olmak üzere tüm engelleri kaldırmamız gerekiyor.
But we need to remove all the barriers in the way where companies and businesses working together to reach the mark of $100 billion in trade.
Eski haline döndürülmesi bu noktada
it is important to restore the practice of visa-free travel.
Bugünkü gündemimizde çok çok önemli Türk Akım ve Akkuyu nükleer santrali konusundaki işbirliğimiz kendi mecrasında ilerliyor. Onun değerlendirmelerini yaptık.
At the same time, we also talked about the Turkish stream and the Akkuyu nuclear power plant projects that we continue working on. We think it is important for these projects to be implemented on a timely basis. We were happy to find out that the construction of the Russian section, specifically the pipeline in Russia, has been completed. Regarding our segment in Turkey, we keep an eye on this process. We hope that within the next few weeks we'll launch the construction of the Akkuyu nuclear power plant.
Bu adımı birlikte atalım istiyoruz.
If Mr. Putin's schedule allows, we would like to attend the ceremony of pouring first concrete together.
Kültür ve turizm alanındaki ilişkilerimizi de eskisinden daha ileriye taşımak istiyoruz.
We also hope to achieve a new level in developing tourism and cultural exchanges between our countries.
Rus turisti ülkemizi ziyaret etti.
Over the first 9 months of this year, we had over 4 million Russian tourists visiting our country.
Türkiye ve Rusya'da karşılıklı olarak düzenlenecek kültür ve turizm yılı bu çabalarımızda önemli bir dönüm noktası olacaktır.
In 2019, our country will have a year of Russia, and there will be a year of Turkey in Russia. I think this will be a turning point in our relations. During our meeting, we also discussed regional issues. Specifically, the latest developments in the Syrian conflict.
Ve gerginliği azaltma muhtırası sahada şiddetin azaltılmasına önemli katkılar yaptı.
Astaninski встреча, а также
We adopted the memorandum on de-escalation zones. We think this made a real contribution to reduce violence in the region. We think we have established, we have laid the groundwork for us to focus on political settlement now. We also think that the joint statement by Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump in Vietnam was important.
Также хочу выразить свое удовлетворение тем, что отношения между нашими странами вышли на новый очень сильный уровень.
I would also like to say I'm very happy that relations between our two countries have reached a whole new level. Of course, this is not enough.
Halklarımızın her alanda daha yakın ve güçlü işbirliği içinde olması noktasında iki taraf da hemfikir.
Обе стороны согласны с тем, что
Both sides agree
страны и народы должны находиться в тесном сотрудничестве.
Our nations
Özellikle de should have a yönelik strong interaction. Adımları çok
Особенно я придаю большое значение
I think it is particularly important to work together in the defense industry.
Konukseverliklerinden dolayı tekrar
Once again, I would like to thank Mr. Putin, my friend, and also the entire Russian government for their warm welcome. Thank you very much.
At least 20 EU countries in the coming hours are set to sign a new defence pact called PESCO. It's been promoted by France and Germany. Our Europe correspondent Peter Oliver next takes us through what all this could mean then for the bloc.
Well, this has been put forward by the European Commission, and some are saying it was done so in a slightly underhanded manner. What's called a Permanent Structured Cooperation, or PESCO agreement, was put forward, some would say, to avoid attention from both NATO and from the European Council. It's designed, according to its architects, to improve security and also to deepen defence cooperation across the EU. It has been put forward as something of a military Schengen, if you will. Now, it does come on the back of a lot of discussions that have happened over the past few months about an EU army. In fact, talk of that stepped up following the United Kingdom's decision in 2016 that it wanted to leave the EU. They had been firmly against an EU army. But one particular EU leader that is very much in favour of an EU military is Emmanuel Macron.
We are in need of profound changes. I propose to our counterparts to create a European army, and I open this initiative towards the French army and all militaries coming from all European countries voluntarily. France has to possess a joint intervention force, common defence budget, common doctrine to act.
So the French president on board with an EU army, but when it comes to this military Schengen agreement or PESCO, there may be a few wrinkles to iron out between two of the major architects. That's France, who want to see a smaller force that fits within France's current military objectives, and also want to see a force that would be able to intervene abroad. Whereas Germany, well, they want to see a larger, more inclusive PESCO agreement, critics of which, though, say, well, it could become quite cumbersome and in fact, quite hamper the effectiveness if you allow too many people in. Well, foreign affairs ministers have started arriving in Brussels for talks on this. We're expecting them to sign something throughout Monday. I'll be keeping an eye on it. As soon as any news comes out of Brussels, of course, I'll be bringing it to you here on RT.
Yeah, already the EU's foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, said that more than 50 military projects have already been proposed by the EU countries. She made that statement in the last few hours. The defence pact's being touted as a new NATO by some, but critics suspect it'll be a strategic disaster.
I think it's definitely another step in the wrong direction. because of course there has been coordination among the elements of the European countries for defense purposes, but overall this has all taken place in the context of NATO, and there is no real difference, because the policies which have been persuaded in this last period were very much confrontation against Russia, the NATO build-up. So I think it is to be seen in this context, and definitely it's not something which should be seen as some kind of separate or whatever, or anti-NATO.
I would not directly see it as aggressive move, but of course I see it quite critical. First of all, Germany with its history should not be more than a defensive military structure, and with this Germany suddenly is also having the possibility to do actively some military action. I think it will help to play always the card good cop and bad cop. The good cop is then the European army and the bad cop is the NATO. So I think they will really work arm in arm.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made these comments on Monday.
Good afternoon. I am looking forward to meet the EU defense ministers. I met 22 of them last week at the NATO defense ministerial meeting. And earlier today, a large number of EU member states announced that they are going to be part of the permanent structure cooperation, or the PESCO. I'm a firm believer of stronger European defense, so I welcome PESCO, because I believe that that can strengthen European defense, which is good for Europe, but also good for NATO. Stronger European defense has the potential to help us increase defense spending, provide new capabilities, and also to improve burden sharing within the alliance. So this is a way to strengthen the European pillar within NATO. I also welcome the fact that so many European leaders have highlighted or underlined the importance of that European defense has to be developed in a way which is not competing with NATO, but which is complementary to NATO. We don't need duplication, we don't need competition, but what we need is cooperation and European defense which is complementing NATO. Not least because non-EU NATO allies are vital to European security. We know that after Brexit, 80% of 80% of NATO's defense spending will come from non-EU allies, and three of the four battle groups which NATO has deployed to the eastern part of the alliance will be led by non-EU allies. So I think to make sure that we do this in a way where we complement each other, there are at least three things which are of great importance. One is that we need coherence when it comes to development of capabilities. We must avoid that the same nations have two sets of requirements for what kind of capabilities they should develop. Second, we need to be sure that forces and capabilities developed under PESCO are also available for NATO. And thirdly, we need the fullest possible involvement of non-EU NATO allies, EU NATO allies in the consultations and in the process, because we have to make sure that also they are as far as possible included in these discussions. Then I also welcome that we are making a lot of progress when it comes to NATO-EU cooperation. We are implementing the declaration and the 442 proposals we agreed last year. We are now looking on what more we can do, especially when it comes to fighting terrorism, working together, NATO-EU, in the fight against terrorism in countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, what we can do when it comes to women, peace and security, and also when it comes to military mobility, which is of great importance, our ability to move forces quickly across Europe. NATO has been working on this for several years, since 2014, addressing many of the bureaucratic legal hindrances for border crossing. But of course we need to do more, and we need also to address issues like infrastructure, means of transportation, and therefore I welcome close cooperation between NATO and the EU on military mobility, and I think this can be a flagship for NATO-EU cooperation, how to move forward on military mobility in Europe.
Are you aware of any Russian interference in Catalonia's independence referendum? Spanish ministers today have said that they believe Russia used social media to try and swing the referendum against Madrid.
So we have seen several reports about Russian attempts to interfere in domestic political processes in different countries. But I will not comment specifically on Catalonia. I will just leave that to the Spanish government to comment on that.
Thank you.
The Iranian government has declared Tuesday a day of national mourning after hundreds of people lost their lives in a powerful earthquake in the country's west. Now, at least 413 people died. 7,370 others were injured when the quake, measuring 7.3 on the Richter scale, jolted the Iranian and Iraqi border provinces. The cities of Sarpol-e-Zahab and Qasr-e-Shirin in Kermanshah province are the hardest hit. Over 173 strong aftershocks have rattled the quake zone so far. Thousands of people have also been left homeless after their homes were razed to the ground. Rescue efforts are underway, with army units trying to find possible survivors trapped under the rubble. According to the commander of Iran's army, who is in the area, more than 600 injured people have been transferred to other provinces for treatment.
Many of our ministers are, well, we will be with you to the end.
All right, these are live images coming out of Sarpol-e-Zahab, which is in Kermanshah province of Iran. There you see the Iranian president, Dr. Hassan Rouhani, speaking there live to the affected people. Of course, this was an area which basically bore the brunt of that 7.3 magnitude earthquake, and where most of the casualties and relief efforts are being concentrated at this time. The president saying and vowing to accelerate the relief efforts in those quake hit areas, including, of course, Kermanshah. He said that his government will make every effort to help the people in these quake hit areas, and he also provided his sympathies with the people in those quake hit areas as well. Let's now cross over to our correspondent, Ghanbar Nadri, who is joining us live in our firm, Sarpol-e-Zahab itself. Ghanbar, what is the latest where you are?
Well, as you can see, there is chaos here, but aid efforts are still ongoing. Khatam al-Anbiya of IRGC was the first to send rescue teams, sniffer dogs, food, tents, drinking water to this particular region, which is called the Plain of Dahab, just about 10 kilometers away from the main city of Sarpol-e-Zahab, which, by the way, has been devastated utterly, in which there are thousands of troops, aid workers, medics providing relief around the clock to those who have been affected the most. That's why they don't have enough personnel to send to the outskirts of Sarpol-e-Zahab, to this particular region that has around 30 big villages with a population of 8,000 people. The one that I'm reporting live now is called Kuik Hassan or Kevik Hassan. It has a population of 2,000 and it has lost at least 130 of its residents so far. The city, the village is the biggest in the region, and it has been leveled to the ground. There are not many buildings, as you can see behind me, are standing, but aid efforts, relief efforts and rescues and many other things are still going on, ongoing. We have managed to bring the commander of Khatam al-Anbiya to this particular region to ask him firsthand what they have done so far in order to help and support this Kurdish population of this particular region. Sardar Ebadullah Abdullahian is with us, and he will now join me live on Press TV to tell us more about his people and what they have done so far.
Please tell us what measures have been adopted and what measures are going to be adopted. Are you satisfied with the trend of the relief operation or not, and what more relief efforts will be made? Are there any statistics you can offer us, any figures and all that? Please fill us in on that. In the name of God, I'd like to thank you and your colleagues, and I'd like to express my condolences over this to our nation and to the people of Kermanshah on this tragic event. Since the early hours after the quake hit, because our troops had stationed in the region, because we are running development projects here, so our troops were there, our forces were there in the very early minutes after the quake hit, based on the order by the commander of the RGC, we informed all the teams stationed in the affected areas, well, in terms of machinery, facilities, human resources for relief operations, and also efforts to remove the rubble, as many equipment pieces and machinery as possible. We provided them both light and heavy machinery, about 20 ambulances, and also different groups and teams that began contributing to the relief operation. In the first stage was relief and rescue operations. We tried to rescue as many people as we could, those who were trapped under the rubble. Well, some also had died, and we tried to remove them from under the rubble. The next stage is actually removing the rubble and the debris, and the third issue is has been to offer services to the affected people. There are a lot of problems on the way. On my way here, actually, since Ezgele was the center of this earthquake, there were a lot of villages on our way. We visited those villages firsthand. People have a lot of problems. They have some demands. Of course, relief has been offered, but given the true extent of the earthquake, we need to do more. The program that we have, the part that has been entrusted to the IRGC, the number of villages, around 130, between 130 to 150 villages, which around 60 to 70,000 households are living there. We are tasked with taking care of their problems, and now we are removing the rubble, and after that we will offer them the necessary services. Well, in my idea, the next stage, which is very difficult and need a very precise timing for that, it requires efforts by all officials. We are pinched for time because every day the weather is getting colder and people need to live in temporary shelters. So then the reconstruction of the buildings in the region, both towns and villages, this is the next stage. You saw the situation of the city. But anyway, at the moment, as I said, the basic needs need to be provided, the basic amenities should be provided for the people, and also the leader of the Islamic Revolution has also instructed all military and state officials to contribute to help with the relief operations. Several villages we have visited, the Press TV has visited firsthand, several villages, the villages have been razed to the ground. Many people have lost everything they had. Some family members were killed. Some residents, they are not satisfied with the relief operations. They say we need more help. Some people here, even some people right in a village nearby, around dozens of people were killed. And the victims, the survivors say they think there's some kind of discrimination. They are Kurds and they are Sunni people. Is there any discrimination in the relief operations? Well, regarding this, I cannot make any judgment about this. This is what people say, and we respect what people say, and we make no judgment about that. But what is certain is that given the large extent of the damage and the large extent of the devastation, well, there were some villages I visited firsthand. They had been destroyed between 60 to 100%. So it requires a lot of effort and facilities, and it needs us to mobilize all our resources, all our officials, to meet people's needs. As you said about discrimination, no, I don't accept that. When I was young, I spent my lifetime here in Kurdistan. People here are very good people, and now that we visited them, we saw no disrespect from the people, but they just want their needs met, and it is our responsibility to help them. Some villages, around 30 villages nearby, they have not received the necessary help and aid, and they are dissatisfied, they are disappointed. When are you going to reach out to those villages? Because we know that most help has been stationed in the cities. Well, after the visit that I had, what we saw, you see, because we don't want to lose time, I ordered our troops to bring in the necessary equipment by two helicopters, basically tents and blankets. Our troops are stationed in Kermanshah. That consignment is on its way. We'll make our utmost to provide tents and blankets to the people. Also, we will try make every effort to provide warm food to the people. Actually, as many as, and we have ordered our cooks to make as many as 30,000 to 40,000 helpings of food for people every day. And today we will try to provide them with blankets. What about the cattle and their livestock? Will you help people? Can the people here return to their farming and all that? Our responsibility, we will discharge our responsibility. What has been the task that we have been entrusted with? But as for the situation that you are seeing now, it requires all officials to make efforts. Well, for example, I, as the commander of the Khatam al-Anbiya construction headquarters or the IRGC, we cannot solve the problems. All of us should join hands and, based on the priorities, solve the problems. Definitely, the damage which has been inflicted should be removed. These people are of the weak classes of the family. As a last question, do we need international aid? And if yes, what aid do we need? Have we received any international aid? Could you please tell us about that? From a humanitarian point of view, when a country faces a problem, definitely the officials, we prepare, express our readiness to help other countries. Now, if other countries want to help us at this juncture, it's up to them. It's up to them to decide whether or not to send in aid. But I think we have, let's tap into the potential that we have in our country, and we use all the potentialities, and if our potentialities are organized both in cities and in villages, definitely we'll be able to solve more than 8% of the problems. Do you have any message for the affected people? Well, we express our condolences to the people, to the affected people in this area. These were the people who were at the forefront of the fight against Iraqis during the war, and under all circumstances, they have been with us. And now the disaster which is unfolding here, we share their grief and we should help alleviate their sufferings. Thank you very much.
As you can see, a lot is still going on here, and it is very difficult to wrap up everything right now. We will be reporting live on Press TV on the coming hours, and hopefully we will have many more, you know, good news to talk about in the next bulletin or so. So it's back to you at the studio.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.